Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. And that piano music we heard was by composer George Gershwin, which is a favorite by my guest, Dr. Michael Clapper. A physician for over 40 years, Dr. Clapper is joining us in Santa Rosa, California. Thank you very much, Dr. Clapper, for joining us. I'm very honored and happy that you are here on Vegan Nation.
Well, thank you very much, Marlene. I'm really honored to speak with you and to your listeners.
What I'd like to start with is asking you about your journey to veganism and your history as a surgeon and a physician and how that came about into being the leader in nutritional medicine.
Well, I appreciate your interest in my career. I am a classically trained physician. I graduated from the University of Illinois College of Medicine in Chicago in the early 70s. And for the first 10 years of my medical career, I was working in emergency rooms, operating rooms, doing blood and guts, Western medicine. But I realized people were not really getting healthier. And I was training to be an anesthesiologist, actually. I was in the residency on the cardiovascular anesthesia service. And day after day, I was putting people to sleep and watching surgeons open up their chests, open up their coronary arteries, and pull this yellow, greasy material out of their arteries called atherosclerosis that was clogging up their blood flow and leading them to heart attacks and strokes. And one day I watched a surgeon pull out a particularly rubbery yellow piece of material out of an artery, and I thought, boy, that stuff looks like chicken fat. And it was like I heard a little voice on my shoulder saying, there's a good reason why it looks like chicken fat, doctor. It is chicken fat and cow fat and pig fat. And my dad died of clogged arteries, and I knew I was going to be laying on that operating table with that Stryker saw going up my sternum, and I said, I don't want to do that. So I was getting clues from my medical work that it was time to change my diet and reconsider eating animal flesh. There was another element also of work in my life. I had done a lot of my surgical training in the trauma unit at Big Bad Old Cook County Hospital in Chicago. And Saturday nights, I'd be in the trauma unit, and I would watch the effects of violence, the shotgun blasts and the stab wounds and the 38 Saturday night specials, and all the other violence, the social violence, the sexual violence, the psychological violence. And it really shook me down to my core there. And I knew as I evolved as a healer, as a physician, I wanted to be a man of peace. I wanted to bring an air of healing and stability to every scene I entered. And so I started reading about Gandhi and various Indian saints about the concept of nonviolence. And one evening in Vancouver, I was pontificating to a friend of mine about wanting to get the violence out of my life while polishing off a 16-ounce porterhouse steak. And he said, well, that's all very nice, sir, but if you want to get rid of the violence in your life, you might consider starting with that piece of animal muscle on your plate there, because your desire for the taste of the flesh of this animal is you're paying for the death of the animal, and you're paying for this violence. And some part of me stiffened and wanted to make a defense to it, but again, that little voice on my shoulder whispered in my ear and said, you know, he's right. And at that point, I couldn't put another piece of flesh in my mouth. I couldn't pay for that kind of violence. And I'd grown up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin. I saw the animals killed. I knew where that flesh was really coming from. And I just couldn't turn my back on it anymore. And so at that point, I stopped eating animal muscle, animal products, and it didn't take long for me then to look at my leather shoes and my leather belt, my leather wallet, and I just started feeling kind of ghoulish in my hand there to eat and use the skin of other animals. If you don't know, you don't know. But once you know, you have an obligation to act on that, to bring your actions into congruence with your inner beliefs. And that's a real key to living a peaceful, harmonious life. So since then, I've been a plant-based person and a plant-based physician. I left the anesthesia and went back to general practice because I suddenly knew what to tell my patients. I had left general practice out of frustration because there was this endless parade of overweight, high blood pressure, diabetic, high cholesterol folks coming to my office. I didn't really know what to tell them as far as good medical care. But once I became vegan, once I became plant-based, my own body changed. A 20-pound spare tire of fat melted off my waist. My cholesterol dropped from 220 down to 140. My blood pressure went from 155 over 90 to 110.70. And I felt great waking up in a nice, light, lean body every day. So now I knew what to tell my patients who were overweight and high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Adopt a plant-based diet, take a walk every day, and watch what happens. Your body knows how to be healthy. And that was in the early 80s, and it's been a remarkable medical and personal experience ever since. My life has gotten more exciting, my medical practice more satisfying, and I feel I'm really making a positive contribution to the planet by helping people understand the importance of living peacefully, eating peacefully, and taking care of everything, their body, the animals, the planet. It all comes down to the same thing. A vegan diet and lifestyle really is the key to not only our personal survival, but our planetary one at this point. It's really the answer to all our environmental problems. You know, pick an environmental disaster these days: water pollution, water depletion, soil erosion, deforestation, global warming. It's all being driven by the industrial production of animal flesh. And a vegan diet will allow us to unfold a different future altogether. And the waters will run clear, the forests will heal, the soils will stabilize, world hunger will disappear. It's so important on so many levels that I'm happy to be a plant-based physician, but I know my larger patient, planet Earth, will also benefit from these kind of efforts. It's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but that's how I got to where I am, and that's what keeps me going every morning, and wanting to communicate with very important educators like you and your very important audience who is open to this message.
Yes, I'm very happy that you're a plant-based physician and that you are also an educator in this new way of health care versus disease management.
Yes, that's been one of the most exciting things. You know, we've been slogging at the coalface here year after year, and I'm certainly not the leader of the movement by a long shot, and I learned from my colleagues and my mentors, and Dr. John McDougall, Dr. Furman, Dr. Evelston, Dr. Greger. There's so many physicians who've awakened to this plant-based message and are doing beautiful, powerful work to get this message out. And one of the most exciting things is now finally it's starting to infiltrate into the ponderous Western medical model. More and more physicians in the, quote, establishment institutions, Kaiser Montefiore Hospital in New York, has a plant-based cardiologist now, and they're starting to realize the truth of this. And I've been privileged to speak at the first two international conferences on plant-based nutrition in medicine and healthcare. I'll be attending the third one in Anaheim this year. That a conference exists at all is exciting. And so many young physicians are contacting me, young medical students. They're awakening to this. And that's so exciting. I have such hope for modern medicine as this newer generation of physicians comes up. They know. They're far more aware than their gray-haired professors about the importance of plant-based nutrition. And they're more willing to have a veggie burger than a filet mignon at night. And that makes all the difference in the world because they're open to the science behind that as well. It's all about education at this point, but now there's real cause for hope.
This is the time for it, especially 2015. And can you give us some of the details about why eating meat is not natural to humans?
You know, we're not carnivorous apes. You know, when you read the work of anthropologists like Nathan Dominy at Dartmouth, he went to Africa and he looks at the skulls of the ancient people, and in between the teeth there's starch grains there, and it turns out that most of the calories our ancient ancestors ate were carbohydrates, were roots and tubers gathered by the women. It was the women who got us through our early survival times there. there by bringing roots and tubers and wild grasses and nuts and seeds, etc. Flesh is a fairly rare addition to the ancient diet. Every 5 hours, a piece of animal muscle is going down our gullet. You know, not even mountain lions eat flesh 3 times a day. Yeah, it's positive. It's ghoulish, like zombies. You know, oh, I gotta eat more flesh. You know, a couple hours gone by, I need more animal flesh. And this river of animal muscle going through our bloodstream hour after hour, day after day, is having devastating effects. It clogs our arteries. It festers in our colon, giving us colon cancer. It injures our intestinal lining, setting us up for, you know, leaky gut, which leads to autoimmune diseases. This animal-based diet is at the root of so many of our medical problems, the vast majority of them, actually. And I give continuing medical education talks to medical audiences, and I tell them, colleagues, no matter what your medical specialty is, if you are a surgeon, a cardiologist, a nephrologist, dermatologist, rheumatologist, pick a specialty, the vast majority of people who are sitting out there in your waiting room this afternoon are there because of what they are eating. It's because of the standard American diet is making them obese and diabetic and clogged up and inflamed. There's no waiting for a miracle pill from the geniuses at Harvard or NIH. It's the food. It's the food. It's the food. It's the food. And not just the meat. The dairy products have devastating health effects, and all the processing, the hydrogenated oils and the sugars and all the preservative chemicals. The whole river is toxic. The whole nutritional river that we're flowing through our system is toxic. And I want to get that message out to the medical colleagues as well as the general public. It's easier than we think, but it absolutely needs to be done at this point. We have no choice. It's right under our noses, right on our plates there. And the media is so important to these wonderful movies like Forks Over Knives, that to get that message out. You know, it's a matter of just educating people. And, you know, we could talk about the science, how each of these things causes problems in the body, but at this point, there's no question that evolving to a plant-based diet is the key.
It's time to take a break. We're having a conversation with Dr. Michael Clapper on nutritional medicine.
Hey, it's Nancy from Angel Band.
And Allie Page from Angel Band.
And you're listening to Community Radio WCUW in Worcester,
91.3.
Streaming at WCUW.org.
Imagine a Worcester without community radio. Imagine Worcester without Democracy Now.
Yes, it's the mainstream media news sponsored by Mallwart. Our corporate masters say, just mindlessly consume, pretend to vote, and everything will be A-OK, even if you're living in a cardboard box.
So please support WCUW, community radio for Worcester, Central Massachusetts, and the globe.
Welcome back to Vegan Nation, and my guest is Dr. Michael Clapper, and he's going to be sharing with us some more information about how we can transition to a vegan diet to improve health of people and the planet.
I did much of my growing up on my uncle's dairy farm in northern Wisconsin. I've been milking cows since I was 8. And we're told, oh, it's nature's perfect food and the best source of calcium, and, you know, have your milk and cheese for strong bones, etc. And Americans do that. And I did it too when I was growing up. And whether you pour it on your cereal as a liquid, whether you churn it into butter, whether you coagulate it into yogurt, whether you ferment it into cheese, whether you freeze it into ice cream, it's baby calf growth fluid. And very importantly, people need to realize that this is the lactation secretions of a large bovine mammal that just had a baby. Cows don't normally give milk. They're mammals. They only lactate when they've had a baby. So the cows are made pregnant. They carry their calf, give birth. The calf is taken away. It's a heartbreaking thing to hear that mother bellow hour after hour, day after day for her calf. But the calf is taken away, and the milk is sucked off this large bovine. And like all mother's milk, it's full of estrogens, which would be bad enough. But now, thanks to modern dairying, Normally, when a cow is made pregnant, she stops lactating, stops giving milk for a few months. But that hurts the dairy producer's bottom line. So now, thanks to modern dairy science, now the cow is lactating even though she's pregnant already with her next calf. So now they're sucking milk off of a large pregnant bovine, and the estrogen content of this liquid is through the roof. Well, there's consequences to this, to eating all these this active mammalian estrogen. Meat industry pointed to soy. Uh-oh, don't eat soy. It's got phytoestrogens, bad for you. The phytoestrogens in soy are barely active, and actually they're protective against breast cancer. But these are active mammalian estrogens. There's no question that what is in cow's milk is active. And you have to look at the effects it's having. We're all disturbed. Our little girls are going through puberty at age 8 and 9 and 10, sprouting breasts and getting their periods. Why is this happening? Well, how about that river of cheese and ice cream and yogurt and milk just pouring down their throats full of estrogens? Could that be an issue driving this? Why do American women get all these breast lumps? Maybe that river of estrogen-laden milk and cheese and ice cream yogurt are stimulating the breast tissue to spread out these breast lumps. How about these guys sitting on the couch eating their cheese nachos and looking down at their chest? Hey, I'm getting these man boobs sprouting out there. Why is that happening? Sir, you're eating baby calf growth fluid filled with estrogens. And so it contributes to that. But it also makes prostate tissue unstable, these estrogens. And guys who eat more dairy get more prostate cancer. When a woman gets a breast cancer, if she's eating dairy and driving mad growth there with more growth-promoting factors, she gets more aggressive breast cancer. The uterus is a hormone-responsive tissue, and the dairy estrogens are thought to play a major role in sprouting out these muscle tumors called fibroids that make the woman bleed and get anemic, and then she needs a hysterectomy, and she winds up on an operating table. You know, we're not baby calves, and if you're not a baby calf, we shouldn't be consuming baby calf growth fluid. And the dairy protein is not friendly. It makes asthma worse and acne worse by turning on genes that cause inflammation. All the way around, I tell folks, look in the mirror. If you got big ears and a tail, if you're a baby calf, go for it. But if you're not a baby calf, don't be eating baby calf growth food. It's the number one substance I would eliminate from the American diet immediately, and that alone would tremendously help so many of these medical problems. So even though I grew up on a dairy farm, I'm no longer a dairy fan, to say the least. And that would be the first step. You know, instead of ice cream in the evening, how about some berries with some rice milk on it? Or you know, there's so much else to pour in your cereal. Really see this that substance for what it is, and call it by its real name. When you see a piece of cheese, say that is congealed fermented baby calf growth fluid. It makes me fat, makes my nose run, may set me up for bad diseases. I'm not going to eat congealed fermented baby calf growth fluid. And call things by their real name. It helps you get past that. I can't give up my cheese.
Couldn't give up my cheese. She said, I know dairy cows are made pregnant every year of their very short lives.
Oh, I can never give up my cheese.
She said, I know if their babies are boys, they'll be killed real soon. She said, I know that the mother cows lose all their babies and they suffer just like you and I.
I couldn't give up my cheese.
But I wish you wouldn't remind me. I'd rather hide out in my cocoon. Cause I couldn't give up, couldn't give up, couldn't give up my cheese. Couldn't give up, couldn't give up, I couldn't give up my cheese.
I couldn't give up my cheese.
Couldn't give up, couldn't give up, couldn't give up my cheese.
Yes, you can. And there's these lovely non-dairy cheeses as a treat.
Vegan cheese, if you really need cheese, have vegan cheese and leave the cows alone, please. Vegan cheese, if you really need cheese, have vegan cheese and leave the cows alone, please. Vegan cheese, if you really need cheese, have vegan cheese and leave the cows alone, please.
Those are my feelings on dairy, and the sooner that exits people's diet, the happier we're. The less work we're going to have as doctors, that's for sure. I think it's a major nutritional problematic substance, except if you're a baby calf.
Yeah, and it seems like it's just a matter of helping everyone to overcome the addiction and the tradition and habits the status quo. I like how you referred to some of the training as the temple of the way it is, and that it's just a change.
Right. You know, your mother didn't know, my mother didn't know. You know, we were fed this as children, and those habits, you know, we're associated as those feelings with comfort food, with home. You don't want to admit mother was wrong. Government is giving information that's not most appropriate, and people like that taste of salt and sugar and fat and flesh in their mouth there. But the truth is, it's not fit food for human beings. And you know, they say once you look behind the curtain, you can't pretend you don't know what's behind the curtain, you know. And my job's to lift the curtain up on these things. And once you know what it really is and what it really does, it becomes a lot easier to say, I used to eat that stuff. I don't want to eat that stuff anymore. And have the bean chili and the lentil stew and vegan cuisine is so delicious. You can make it Italian style, Chinese, East Indian, Thai, Mexican. Have fun with the cuisine. Keep it on the whole food side there. There's no great sacrifice. It's a matter of changing your taste, and they do. And after a few months, you're really looking for those vegan entrees instead of the animal-based ones. So people can change, even in advanced years there. So the key is making the food taste great. You know, the educators like you and using the media play a key role. So do the vegan chefs. But taste is worth 1,000 words. And I tell people, you want to help people change, put the delicious food, the vegan food, in their mouths, you know, and have open houses, have potlucks, bring these dishes, put it in their mouths, and if you can get old Uncle Recalcitrant Uncle Harry to, you know, to have a mouthful of tofu lasagna or delicious chili and have him say, oh, if that's vegan food, oh, I could eat that, oh, that's not bad, well, then you've changed their lives, and then it becomes much easier to understand and to talk to them. And so, you know, it's not the doctors so much here that's going to help this transition happen. It's the educators and the people making the food and the parents, the example they set for their kids, getting healthy food in the schools. You know, the examples we set is everything. Gandhi said, example is not the best way to teach. Example is the only way to teach. And as they grow up, you know, the seeds get planted, and a new generation of healthy plant-based kids will save their own futures and everyone else along the way there.
And for those who are looking for more information, you have a lot of valuable information on your webinars, articles, and newsletters and website. Can you share that information with our listeners?
People want to get more information or follow my speaking engagements and sign up for my newsletter called Medicine Capsule. You just go to my website, drclapper.com, and it's all spelled out, DOCTORKLAPER, one P in Clapper, .com. So DOCTORKLAPER.com. You can sign up for our Medicine Capsule newsletter. This is all available on the website, drclapper.com. So I invite your listeners to check that out.
Thanks. And also the webinars of Healthy You.
Yes, we conduct webinars every month. We do a topic that people can listen to the presentation and then call in with their questions and we'll answer them. And then we post it on the website there. So absolutely, our Healthy You webinars is very topical. And we invite people to send in topics that you'd like me to discuss, and we will base webinars around that. So that's all available on the webinar page at drclapper.com.
When I think of you, I think of that quote by Thomas Edison, and I think you probably know that by heart, about the doctor of the future.
Yes, the doctor of the future will give no medicine, but instead educate his patient about diet and its effects upon health and disease. And yes, I'm all for that. And he was very prescient, one of Thomas's brighter ideas there, along with the light bulb. He knew that diet was key. You know, this isn't Hippocrates knew it. Let food be thy medicine. He knew it. And it's turning out to be true on a level way beyond even Hippocrates dreamed. You know, every meal washes through our tissues, and they turn genes on, they turn genes off, they play our DNA like a piano. And so every meal makes a difference, indeed. Let food be thy medicine, and thy nourishment on every level, including nourishing a healthier future for us and the other creatures with whom we share this planet, and the people, the kids who come after us. It's their planet, and we've kind of messed it up pretty bad. We owe them, and the best thing we can do to make amends is help people adopt a plant-based diet and let this planet heal, let our lives heal. The wars would stop. Everyone would be fed. There'd be things for everyone to do. For satisfying work, it would heal this planet and the people on it on every level. And I really appreciate you helping us get the word out about that. It's the most hopeful thing going that I know.
It is exciting to see integrative medicine, what used to be called complementary or alternative medicine, taking its proper place, thanks to you and your colleagues that you mentioned earlier.
I'm glad to see that alternative medicine is disappearing. It's not alternative medicine, it's good medicine. It's either medicine that works or medicine that doesn't. And plant-based medicine works more effectively than any of the stents and the statins that I know of. So absolutely, it really is the true medicine. And I encourage people to learn about it and young people to follow that as a profession. And medicine, there's a lot of dogma. This is the way diabetes is. Once on insulin, always on insulin. High blood pressure, but they will take these pills the rest of their lives. After stent and statins are the only treatment for atherosclerosis. Well, George was right there. It ain't necessarily so.
Ain't necessarily, ain't necessarily, ain't necessarily, ain't necessarily, ain't necessarily so.
Because they're not looking at the underlying cause and they're not looking at the obvious treatment for this. And the truth is, these are all dietary produced diseases from a maladaptive diet. We'll go to a truly health enhancing plant-based diet, and these diseases go away. And it's going to create a complete inversion, a complete different viewing of health, disease, medicine. And it's happening. And so the lesson to all of us in medicine and science, but even consumers, is everything that comes into our awareness off the media and magazine articles, you know, this is the latest and this is the way it is, you should view it through the lens of maybe, but maybe not. And we'll see, because so much we've seen that the way it is over the last 40 years of medicine, I've seen, oops, no, that doesn't work. Oops, no, that's not the way it is. So, and with so many of these things that we thought were mysterious and etiology unknown, it's not unknown at all. It's the food, it's the food, it's the food. It's been the food all along, and that's the place to start. And if we just make that change, that transition, that evolution of understanding, then everything's going to get better.
Thank you, Dr. Clapper. Thank you for helping to heal the world, heal the people, heal the planet, and helping us to heal ourselves. We greatly appreciate you.
Well, thank you. It's been an honor to share these thoughts with you, and that your listeners be interested in this gives me hope as well. So thank you for the honor and the opportunity to share this time with you and your listeners.
We've been listening to Dr. Michael Clapper, MD, who's one of the leading experts in plant-based nutritional medicine. And he's at the True North Health Center in Santa Rosa, California. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. The songs we heard were The Comedy Relief with Vegan Smith, whose song is titled Couldn't Give Up My Cheese. Now, let's listen to some more of It Ain't Necessarily So by the pianist George Gershwin in celebration of the work of Dr. Michael Clapper.
To read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. Now, little David was small, but oh my. Yes, David was small, but oh my. Miss Davy was small, but oh, 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 my.
Join us next week at this time, where we'll bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at wcuw.org/vegannation. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Marlene Narrow, wishing you a good day.